this is an oral history interview with Mr. Woodrow Wallace.
Yes.
Conducted by Barbara Hendry on July 24, 1992, at the Kyler Center. This is
side one of tape number CB/002BH.
Okay, my name, Woodrow Wallace.
Okay, I'll ask you first, when you were born, Mr. Wallace?
I was born in South Carolina, April 17th, 1917.
Where in South Carolina?
Bonneville, B-A-R-N-W-L-L, Bonneville, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. When did you move to Savannah?
1932.
And what brought you to this city?
Well, I had an uncle and an aunt live here. My mother passed and I moved with them, my aunt and uncle.
Did you move into this area of town?
When I first came to Savannah, I was on the east side. And later years, I moved to this area. We moved to 40th Lane and Florence. And my aunt lived at 35th Lane after I grew up. Mm-hmm.
So about how old were you when you moved over here to, I guess, the Kyler community?
The Kyler community, I was in the late 30s or the early 40s. Let's say 1939.
And have you lived here continuously since then? Or?
No, I spent most of my time in service. I stayed in service. I went to the Army in 1941. And when I came back to Savannah, it was in the late 50s, 56. I had completed 21 years in the Army in 61, and then I moved, I bought a house on 37th Street and Burris, 37 and Burris. And I've lived there continuously since moving. No other place to go, I don't guess.
So you were drawn back to come back to this area. You have friends and relatives here?
Well, I don't have too many relatives here, but then I lost all the acquaintance after I stayed away for about 21 years.
Okay. And when you lived here with your aunt and uncle when you were younger, do you have any memories of what it was like being a young person in this area? What kind of things did you do for recreation? What life was like here back then?
Well, I can remember the row houses and the sand streets, and we had our bicycles. I don't know, a bunch of kids around, but it wasn't like the days, paved streets and automobiles. We had the milkman. I can remember the milkman and the horse coming through delivering milk in the morning. He's putting a bottle of milk to this door and what have you.
With the horse and?
Horse-drawn buggy with the milk. And I can remember that early in the morning, you could hear the old horse foot when you're on the street, and, you know, had a horse foot to make all that noise. And he delivers milk in the morning before you wake up, before day, he's coming down. And that horse done that route so long, he didn't have to touch the horse. That horse would walk that route every day.
Really?
Without telling him anything. And stop to the houses. A horse is pretty smart.
And that was...
That was in the 30s.
So
It was Annette's Dairy. I can remember the name good, Annette's Dairy. And it was, I think they were located on Montgomery and about 40th or 41st Street. Well, later years I went into service when I left here. When I come back, during the war, Fort Stewart was built. Fort Stewart wasn't built at that time.
Oh, just during World War II.
During World War II, Fort Stewart was built. Mm-hmm. And then they called Camp Stewart. Mm-hmm. And there were soldiers all in town. I just came back on furlough, mm-hmm. on leave, you know. They had the USO, and naturally all soldiers, when they go in every big town, they look for the USO, because they had the young lady they entertained, to dance with, and they would have something like punch or something like that. And the truck would bring you in, time to check out the side, and they'd take you back on the truck and take you back to camp. About the community now, really the community was, I'd say, an honest community. People didn't sleep with the doors locked or nothing like that. And there wasn't much breaking, there wasn't much stealing, there wasn't, you know. The kids had their little problems with the little fights and all that, but there wasn't no cutting and a whole lot of killing like it is today. Of course, that's all over. That's universal. What else I knew about today? You asked me some questions about it.
I'll ask you some more. Sure. I'm going back to the childhood, talking about the horse and buggy bringing the milk in.
Yeah.
Did people still get around themselves using horses and carts back in the 30s, or what was transportation like back then?
Transportation in the 30s was mostly walking. I walked from all over this town. There wasn't any, well, there was a few taxis, and the taxi would cost 25 cents, 15 or 25 cents. And we had streetcars. And the streetcars run on certain street. We had different lines. You know where the streetcar line was. And they went out at first, Port Wentworth that way. And they went on the east side on certain streets, Bonnet Street, West Broad Street, Havisham Street, all that run that way. And going this way, we had one on Greenwich Street, 31st Street. And you know where the crisscross. But you had so far to walk to get to the streetcar line. After the streetcar, then we got the buses.
Do you know about when that changeover happened from the streetcar to the buses?
That took place in the 30s.
How about utilities as far as electricity and water and heating and those kinds of things?
Okay. Now here's the question. Electricity, when you find someone with electric, then I guess that was a luxury effort. Okay. I remember our first utility was electric. I remember the first. We had kerosene. Everybody had kerosene lamps. And then you had the wood man. There wasn't no electric stove or gas stove. The gas wasn't enough. So you had your wagon, a horse-drawn wagon that would bring wood. And then you had the ice box and you'd get you a block of ice. So it wasn't no electric and there wasn't no gas. The streets wasn't paved, and okay. Um, It's an amazing thing. All them row houses had your toilets outside.
Outhouses.
Is correct word. Yes. The toilets outside. We had running water now. Okay. Well, you had running water.
Each house
had running water. But there wasn't much more than stuff like cabins and different things. You kept everything in big cans and things to keep maybe roaches out.
So all the cooking was done on the wood stove?
Wood stove, yes. And you heat it with wood. And we had coals, a certain type of coals, and a coal bucket to lay the women used to iron. They had what they call an iron. It's a round heat coals, and then put your iron on top, and then it get hot. Then you take a cloth and get it, and then iron the clothes. You have about two irons. You put one on. Well, I said, you're ironing with this one. Because the hell, it was that thick, the iron was. I said, it's like 2 inches thick. 2 to 3 inches thick. It was a heavy little iron. But that iron would stay hot a long time. They put another iron on top of those coals. Well, you had a grate, and I didn't sit right on the coal. And it would heat up, and they'd iron, just be there all night, I guess, ironing clothes. Mm-hmm. Washing clothes, there wasn't no washing machine.
All by hand.
Wash tubs, scrub board, a rub board, or call it a scrub. I don't know what to call it, a scrub or rub.
And did people, women did that, or did
no.
Men and boys help with those chores?
No, that's strictly women. It's embarrassing because they catch a man washing his clothes on a rub board, I guess.
So a man wouldn't want to be seen doing that.
No, sure wouldn't.
Well, how about work back then? The women were doing a lot of the household work. What kind of work were people doing around these parts?
What kind of work? The men were doing mostly then, that time, construction work or what have you. You had your waterfront. You had people. Thing was building, so you had a lot of people working in different places, like the waterfront, all type of construction, brickyards or what have you. The men were doing that kind of work. Normally, housewife. She would stay home and take care of the house and raise the children. And it was a good thing because the children were raised. They would wash, iron, and cook, and raise the children.
That all took a lot of time, doing it all.
Oh, gosh. They had a job. I could see what they went through with. They had a job raising the children, cleaning the house. And when one got a job, she wasn't working the hotel. Normally during that time, most of the, I would say, richer people that was able, they would employ a house, a maid, a cook, and some was working like that. But some of the women were working like that. But the women wasn't working in no factories or nothing.
Just
domestic service. And then that would come World War II. We got a shipyard. The first women was hired, I know, in Savannah, was working in the shipyard.
So some of the women from this neighborhood worked in that shipyard.
That's the beginning of industrial work for women. And they went from there to airplane factory. We had this airplane factory out here, and they were there, and they worked in the shipyard. And just the amazing thing about it, instead of making a lot of money, they're making about $14 a week. And that was good money. I worked for many days, coming up at 10 cents an hour.
Where were you working for 10 cents an hour?
Anywhere I could. Anywhere I could get a job, 10
this
cents an hour.
Were you doing odd jobs before you entered the service?
Yes. Sure was.
What were some of those?
The job?
Yeah.
Oh. I worked at the grocery store, I work at the drugstore, the grocery store. But when you work, you say, like, if you got a job at the baker shop or something like that, and you could consider that 10 cents an hour, so you might work 10 hours a day, you make a dollar. But that dollar would go so far. I can remember that bread was 3 cents a loaf and different things like that. So you had a grocery bill, they had the corner grocery, so there wasn't very many, what you call them, supermarkets. Like we had the A&P, Rogers, A&P, Piggly Wiggly. That's the only one I know that was at that time. Rogers went out of business. A&P and Piggly Wiggly still stand.
So did most people shop at small, locally owned businesses?
Right, the corner grocery. You could go down and get your account, and everybody know everybody in the small neighborhood. So you went to this place, grocery store, and you open your account. You probably, end of the week, you probably was a man $2.50 or $3. You pay your bill and start off on another one. And they made money, real big money too.
Do you know if those businesses were owned by people who lived in the neighborhood?
Most of them, a few of them that at that time lived in the neighborhood, a few. And the rest of them didn't live in the neighborhood. They would come every day, open the business. When they closed, they go back home. Then some of them live upstairs. They had an upstairs over most of the business. And most of them live upstairs over the business.
What other kinds of businesses do you remember other than the grocery stores being right in the neighborhoods? Barber shops?
Well, other than that, no. Most of the barbershops, we had a, at that time, say, West Broad Street, and that was the area of the restaurant, barbershop, theaters, what have you. Wasn't too many neighborhoods, there wasn't too many business, really. Wasn't too many business. We had certain streets, I guess, zone areas for business. And the main business we had in Savannah was on West Broad Street. At the time, West Broad Street, that was the main street for the blacks. That was the main street, West Broad Street. Because we had everything there with the movies, well, if you name it, it was on West Broad Street. And then Broaden Street. Yeah. Okay, Broaden Street was the clothing, anything you want on Broaden Street, the furniture stores, the hardware, or say like Western Auto and all that was on Broaden Street. And then there's other business. You name it, restaurant or what have you, was on West Broad Street. So you only had, at that time, you didn't have a big shopping center to go here, and you had to go to one of those particular streets to get there.
Now, I'm going to stop this a minute, Mr. Ross, because the battery is low. Here, okay.
Yeah.
That's on now. We're back on. We put in new batteries. Let's hope it works okay.
Yes, and I was speaking when I left Savannah. In 1941, early 41, going into service, I was one of the first or the second bunch of draftees to leave Savannah. And when I left here, there was wasn't too much changes in the way people live or where the city was going. But when I came back after the war, they had made a lot of changes. And the first change I noticed when I got back here, we had black police. Before that time, there wasn't any black in authority in anything. But we had black police. We had Well, we always had the doctors, and we had one or two lawyers, but I think it was eight. They hired eight police fresh, and I think the last one retired here about 2 years ago.
Of the first ones.
Mm-hmm. They had made 30 some odd near 40 years. What is it going to?
The change you're talking about, the changes.
The changes. Well, the whole city had changed. I was given some of the changes then, which was such as street paving and different jobs. We had a shipbuilding yard here, and Savannah was upgraded a lot from the time I left until the time I came back. When I retired in 1961, then I also got a job at the waterfront working a longshoreman. And I worked at 21 years, longshoreman.
Was that with the Ocean Steamship Company?
Right, Ocean Steamship. We started down at the Ocean Steamship.
And you worked there from 61 to?
I worked there from 61. I retired in 1980.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of what the Coastal Heritage Society is real interested in, you know, they have that roundhouse complex. Mm-hmm. They're interested in the life and times of the railroad workers and people from the Ocean Steamship Company, what it was like to work at those places. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that.
Well, really, and I forgot what year I wasn't here when they got a union. But the people at the Ocean Steamship always say they have formed the International Longshoremen Association. And the only way that they got any money, they went on a strike for more money. I wasn't here, but I know the history by going down later to work. And the Ocean Steamship wasn't really paying the money that they should pay. And we joined the International Longshoremen Association. And it became one of the highest paying jobs. Vanessa, when I went down, it was paying, in 1958 when I joined, I was still in the service. It was paying $1.75 an hour. When I left in 1980, I was getting $18 an hour. So that's different. Mm-hmm. Well, we went through two strikes. The longest one was 60 days. Mm-hmm. And let's see.
And were the workers, the longshoremen, were both black and whites working together there?
Well, when I first went down, there was nothing but black working, longshoremen were. But we had checkers. Stevie Doe's were all white. Stevie Doe's and the checkers was white.
Mm-hmm. And then later on, longshoremen were some white longshoremen.
We did have very few. Very few.
They were
up to the 80s was very few white that joined. Most well, the work at that time we didn't have automation, hadn't taken over. And it was real strange work. Mm-hmm. You'd go on the ship, I'd walk on the ship one day and I'd come out, water be done run all down in my shoes, sweating down in the ship hole. There's no whole lot of ventilation, no air, but we had to load that ship from the bottom up.
They didn't have the big containers till.
There wasn't no containers at that time. When I first went, if you see two or three containers on a ship, that was a lot of containers. There wasn't a container. They didn't have the facilities for loading containers. Mm-hmm. Everything was changed. Well, everything, automation took over. when I left, there were four container cranes, and they had the docks down there that would load the big long ship would pull into the dock. It's clear, and the big cranes would load the containers. So before I left, I was in charge of the trucking. We had these trucks to bring the containers up to the ship. And I had one of them. I was a foreman for the truck. I like that. Mm-hmm. I made 25 cents more on the hour. Yeah. Okay. The waterfront provides right now, I think, the best pension, retirement pension, and quite a few benefits. And I enjoyed the work, and now I'm enjoying the...
You earned it.
Right. They didn't give me nothing. I earned everything. They didn't give me nothing. I earned it.
That's right.
Because if you're able to go through with it and stick with it for 21 years or 20, and they're 22 years like I did.
Did a lot of men get health problems from that work, like back injuries and, hurt on the job?
Yes, it was very hazardous when it first started. And in later years, we got safety equipment, and we had all kind of safety lessons and things to keep so many people from getting hurt. Broke up leg, broken leg. So many people got killed. Mm-hmm. But after you got safety equipment and safety, you had to have go to safety classes, and if it didn't, you couldn't work. You had to have safety. Too many people was getting hurt.
When did they start doing the safety?
Oh, they started doing that in the 60s.
Okay. Maybe the union influenced that?
Well, the insurance company was behind it. The insurance had to pay.
Save the money.
Yeah. So the insurance company put safety inspectors on the ship. And you had to have steel-toe shoes, helmets. You had to wear certain gloves, certain clothes you had to wear. So, if you go to the ship and you didn't have your safety shoes on, go back home, we get somebody else.
And when you were just working every day in and day out, did you and your coworkers have anything to help the work go by, like songs or jokes or things that you would sing while you were unloading or loading?
No. No. You'd probably be too tired to be out there singing. No, we'd have tell jokes. Everybody, if you was working with a regular gang and you knew everybody there, then y'all probably would tell a few jokes to kind of pass it, make the day go faster. But I think we was interested in getting that ship loaded and go home. Yeah, wasn't much. I wait just a little bit now on the railroad, and they had railroad songs. But I didn't wait long now, because that was another. Ooh, that was a rough job.
That was Central of Georgia.
Central of Georgia Railroad.
What did you do for
them? I laid rails and put down the cross ties. But I didn't. Now, this was no long time. It only happened about 3 months, and then I went into service.
Okay.
From the Central of Georgia, I have a railroad social security number. Finances, everybody in this area got a two, started with two. All the social security started with two, 250, 251, 253, and all the way up to 256. I don't know how high they go. But the first three numbers would be 250.
Mm-hmm. And that was railroad?
No, no. My social security number is 711.
Oh.
I have a railroad. That's a railroad number, 711. I had to,
So that was that your first, what you might call real job before you went in service, other than 10 cent an hour.
I worked at the Order of Railway Conductors Home for a couple of years. Order of Railway Conductor. They had a retired conductor's home on Wilmington Island, Whitmarsh Island, which now is the education center.
That was the Central of Georgia also?
That was, no, that's a railway conductors.
Oh, okay, just students.
Only conductors had a some kind of association where retired conductors could live in this home. We had, at the time I was out there, we had 100 and some odd conductors, retired conductors. If you you want to turn over, say you retire and you conduct, and at that time maybe if you made retirement $200 a month, I'm just saying, I'm putting a figure now, $200 a month, you probably had to turn over $150 to the conductor's home, and then you could live out there, everything free, but you could live there. And that was, but after I left here, they sold the home to the education center. It's that's what it is now.
Where did all the conductors go?
I don't know where they went. When I got back, it was gone. The conductor was gone. The home was sold.
Well, did blacks and whites live out there? Or
no, there wasn't no black conductors. Not here. Not any that I knew of.
I guess there's a difference between the conductor and the porter. Sleeping Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters was one of the first black unions in the country.
Right.
But what was the difference in their job?
Oh, well, okay. A conductor is, say, how do we put it? Conductor is in charge of the train.
Okay.
He's in charge of the train. He's taking up tickets. When he come around, y'all the ticket sleeves, and everybody got to take tickets out. When you get your ticket, you buy your ticket, and he takes up all the tickets where you going, and he punch where you going. So you're going to St. Louis. He punched St. Louis. When you got to change in Atlanta, he give you another ticket, take up that one, punch one, give you another change in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But conductors was actually the master of the train. And the porter was in charge of baggage or what have you. Mm-hmm. Seeing the baggage and everything. Now you had a restaurant crew. Probably was different. I don't really know, but I do know the conductor was in charge of the train during that time.
Yeah. Get educated about this stuff. Don't ask such stupid questions in the future. So it sounds like the railroad, the Central Georgia Railroad, was a common place that people in this neighborhood worked at. Is that a big employer?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They had a turntable, a big shop down there on the corner at Louisville Road and Westboro, bounded by Westboro and Louisville Road down, and they had on this side was the railroad station, Central of Georgia Railroad. And on this side they had the turntable where they work on the engine. If you want to turn the engine around, they drive it on there and then turn that whole thing around. They work on the engine down there. I can remember all that now when I was a kid.
But those 3 months of laying tracks probably for not very high wages.
Well, I got more money than making that 10 cents an hour. I sure did. We made good money on the railroad.
Do you remember what was the wage back then?
Yes, I sure do. We were making 25 cents an hour. I was doubling what I was making otherwise.
That was laying the tracks.
Yes.
Then the war came along?
1941. Well, it they start building up for the war. We was drafted, I read it in 1940, because it was building up to the war, because the war was going on in Europe since 1939. Great Britain was being just torn apart by Hitler, Germany. And British and America was good allies, so they was asking America for help, because Hitler was just walking through countries. And we started mobilizing troops in 1940, September 16th, 1940. So, you know, that's not too hard to forget when you had to sign up to go to war. We had draft board one and two here. And I went down to draft board number one, registered. They called me, went down to register. Then they, I don't know why, rather fortunate or unfortunate, I left here in 41. I made just about a year, and then they bombed Pearl Harbor. Well, I was supposed to get out. See, you train for 1 year to say, going to train you good for 1 year and let you go back home, draft another crew and train them until the thing actually starts. But I made my year just about, and I was going on my furlough that Sunday. It was a Sunday morning here, and the news come over the radio, bomb Pearl Harbor. I never heard of Pearl Harbor. A lot of people didn't. But they had bombed Pearl Harbor, and MPs and everybody around and everybody off on leave and on all riding the trains and everything. Go back to camp. They bombed Pearl Harbor. I said, that's a big deal, they bombed Pearl Harbor. I can't do it. But anyway, I was hell for the duration. That's what they say. Yeah, but I only was in for 1 year to start with. My contract was 1 year. But anyway, after the bumper, I was hell for the duration. And the duration ended up in 1945. And when they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I was in Nagasaki. I've been to Nagasaki. Just after the bomb, I went to Nagasaki. Nagasaki was bigger than Savannah. There wasn't a building left standing.
It must have been shocking.
Oh, God, they killed some people. Oh, that bomb killed some people. And so many was wounded. I hope to never drop another bomb like that.
So many.
Oh, goodness. They had a big cement bridge going across right over from this big church where we went to start it off. And you could see all them Japanese was walking. And they go, and you could, when the bomb swept them off, it left a shadow of a person's body. Draw the picture. And you could see all them people's shadows across that bridge, like on the thing. Be a shadow of people's body. Some small, some large, you know. So I said, it was babies blown away and everything. Oh, gosh. That was awful.
So you were there during the occupation then?
I was in the occupation of Japan. I went to Japan during the occupation. I sure was there.
And then you chose to remain in, was it the Army?
Army.
Make a career of it?
All the way. I had a reason for making a career out of it. When I came back here to Savannah in that 45, November 1945, just think of the people that left Savannah or Chatham County was coming back for jobs. They had some kind of office set up with trying to help you get jobs and what have you. But just look at the number of people that here. It was a big, oh, goodness, so many people. And there wasn't that much work. So I said, I take another 3 years, call myself until they're going to settle down. Then I got to some places I didn't like. So I said about a year and a half or two. Then I had to have 3 years. I took another 3 or 4 years and I went to Japan. I said, when the time I get back, then things will be over. We done sell that. And when I got back to the States then, I had been in about half of my career, about 10 years. So I said, I'm going to go to Europe. I put in for Europe. So I had to take another 4 years to go to Europe. And when I got back from Europe, I only had about 3 or 4 years left, so I went to put in for Fort Stewart. At that time called Camp Stewart.
So then you got to be
closer to the home. So I bought a home, yeah, like I say. After that. And I done the rest of my time at Camp Stewart.
So one of the motivations, it sounds like, for staying in the Army was lack of jobs back home. Sounds like you'd come home and check every few years.
And after you get, say, over half of your career, it promised you so much. Promises were made to the soldiers. We take care of you for this hospitalization. We take care of all our soldiers and all that. But everything went pretty good until recent years when under the Republican administration, job preference went. We had job preference. That was the first thing President Reagan knocked out, job preference. The next thing, when he got in there, the last thing he did before he got out was real mean, was he put the Union president in jail on the people at the airplane,
Air controllers.
You're right. Air controllers.
Right, I remember that.
He put the president in jail of the air controller, which was mean. That broke the union.
I
really hate. But anyway, at that time I was about ready for retirement.
You were glad too.
Well, we still have a pretty strong union down there. The longshoremen union is still pretty strong.
Are you active in group of retired longshoremen? Do they have an organization?
Sure,
club?
Sure do.
Okay. What kind of activities do you all do?
Really, we meet once a month, third Tuesday. And the president keeps us all informed of all the latest activities, different things we're doing. And then periodically we get a raise because of so many years. We ask for a raise, we get it. I don't know whether we get rid of any more soon, but they have a pretty good retirement. And we ask for different things, more medical benefits or what have you. We get together, we got, say, 150 retirees. And
they have a social hall or anything, or is it strictly to ensure your benefits?
We don't have a social hall. We meet at the YMCA on May Street. We don't have a hall.
Well, I know you're real active in a number of organizations in the community today.
Okay.
One thing that's up, before you talk about the ones today, if you don't mind, do you mind chatting for another couple minutes? Or are you getting tired out?
Go ahead.
Okay.
You can ask the rest of the question if you want.
This is side two of the tape with Mr. Woodrow Wallace. And I was going to ask you about any kinds of organizations or clubs that you were a part of years ago as a young man before you joined the Army, or or you a member of any kind of organization or club in the community back then?
No, only the Boys Club. But since then, I retired from the military. I joined the DAV, the VFW, and the American Legion, which I am now commander of the VFW Post. Post 500, I better put that, the emphasis in that, Post 500, the American Legion. With the Longshoremen Retired Association, my social club, yeah, that doesn't really matter. But fraternal organization I will mention.
And I know you're also involved here at the Catholic Church.
Yes. I've done a lot of this building, all this. I did a lot of work in this. In this building. This was a school building. Upstairs was, years ago, we had, I don't know how many nuns, but anyway, Frank Mathis, he had a complete archive, all the...
Yeah, I'm going to meet with him next week, with Mr. Mathis.
Oh, God, he loved to talk. You ought to just sit down and get you a half a day to talk with him.
Okay.
He loved to talk. But anyway, he got all that about the church, about the first black nun. Well, some few months ago, you see in out front here, right on this side. You have me. Did you pay any attention when you come in? No, on the front out there. Well, when you go, look to your right when you get outside and see where a few of us got together and built this. We invited one nun that's living that was here when it started. One black nun. Only one living that. Well, that was way back, see, years ago. She's so old now. She came down here this year to unveil the statue that we built up. And that was good. And she wanted to go upstairs so bad. Where she lived, you know, we helped her upstairs too. They lived upstairs in the same building.
How long ago did the convent close for the nuns?
Mr. Mathis will bring you up to date on. He got something on all of it. He got some pictures and everything you'd want. If you're going to make any pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, he got some.
Did you go to school here when you were a young man?
I went to the school right over there, Florence Street School.
What grades were you in school there?
I went on through up until the 8th grade, and then the 9th grade, they had to go over to, Kyler. From there, that was the high school.
those were the neighborhood schools?
Neighborhood school. Believe me, all the schools were neighborhood schools.
Did a lot of the teachers also live in the neighborhood? Do you remember?
Yes. So, I would say they lived in the neighborhood. In fact, I don't know where they all lived at, but... I do know that the neighborhood, well, you know, everything at that time, everything was segregated, everything. And the black teachers were taught at the black school.
I think Florence Street was one of the first black schools established in the city, from what I've gathered.
It was one of the first. Yeah.
The first buildings. People were meeting in houses and things before that.
Yeah, I understand that. I really wouldn't know. I guess you had been coming here in 31 and 32. See, I wouldn't know. No. Again, from South Carolina. I was born in South Carolina. And like I said, I gave you that later year. Well, early years, I don't know whether it'd be early or late.
16 when you came?
No, I was only about 18.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes. And two brothers and one sister.
Did they get spread out with different relatives or something?
Well, my sister and myself, we came here together, too. She finally moved back to Carolina, and I stayed here. Yeah.
One other thing I was interested in that we're going to have as part of this study is an exhibit on the hospital. Did you ever use that charity hospital? Were you ever a patient there?
No.
Get shots there or
no.
Anything like that as a child?
No. No. I've only visited some people I know in the hospital. Never.
So
I used the Georgia Infirmary.
When you were sick as a little boy?
Yeah, Georgia Infirmary. This was a charity, and they had the Georgia Infirmary. We had two hospitals. I stayed in the Georgia Infirmary for about, I didn't stay that long. But not in the hospital, maybe a couple of days. But never in charity, no.
Oh, and I wanted to get on tape the thing you told me the other day, that the USO Club during World War II was located somewhere around here in this neighborhood.
Oh, the USO Club was located in the same building you're sitting in.
Oh, I thought I was somewhere nearby. It was right in here.
Right. It was in this, but now we had a building, which is part of this building, but then they put an extension outside. And they put it was kind of huge building, and it looked like one of them old army barracks, but sitting right in that gun, out that door, right in that park, well, there wasn't no fence around it then, but right in that building, facing off right after this. That was the USO.
That was throughout the war. It was here.
Yes.
All the soldiers from all over. And then after the war, I guess they closed.
Well, they closed it. And then we used it here. I do know we used it here quite a bit before we renovated this building. The church used it as a social hall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They used it as a social hall. Then later years, we said, let's just tear this old building down. That's what we did. And then we renovated this. We renovated this first, tore that one down last.
And that was largely through volunteer.
Volunteer work.
Local parishioners.
Right. We did this all just free. Anytime we get off in the afternoon, everybody get off to come around here and work a little while.
So, I feel like there's a strong community spirit in parts of the areas.
It was then. I don't know how the younger people is going to be now, but it was then. I put in many hours here after I retired, and I'm being retired in 79 or 80, somewhere in there. I waited for me a couple of years renovating this building.
When you have not really been, maybe been retired from wage work, but not from work.
You can say that again. I went out after I got through with all that. I went out and got me a couple of these little plots out there at Scottsdale Field, which is a Chatham County community. They got lots where you can go out and plant. And today I still got a garden out there.
Oh, now that's very interesting. So these are garden plots for people in the city.
Yes.
Is that recent, or has that been going on a long time?
It's been going on at least 10 years. At least 10 years.
So
maybe longer. I'm going to say my wife died in 81, and I had a plot out there when she died. So I'd say it's been going on better than 10 years.
And you still do that, too?
Yes, I do. Go out there early in the morning and wake 1 hour and a half, and it's hot. Never after 10 o'clock.
Where's that located?
That's located, you go 17 to, well, it's right on Bush Road, but I'm trying to think how I can tell you how to get there. Little Neck Road. Little Neck Road off of 17 and turn Bush Road, and you go about half a mile. Down.
Do a lot of people in the area have gardens out there?
Well, it's a lot of people have gardens out there now. And then they got some of everything out there. They got, that's a big recreation place. Mm. Pond, fishing pond.
Okay,
picnic grounds. They got these places where people walk every morning. Excuse me. That's a large tract of land out there, too. Mm-hmm.
So you raise a lot of the vegetables that you eat, it sounds like.
Well, some, yeah. I mostly do it for exercise. Like here the other day, I brought in so much okra. I give it to the people here. Next time, I might give some in the community. But I don't sell it, I just give it away.
Neighbors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you think of anything else that you would have liked me to ask you that I didn't ask about the past or the community or any other comments?
No, because I will leave some of the things for Mr. Matthews that he knows more about. And then be more accurate, and also starting off with this service year was Dot Owens. She was in charge. She had a.
Yeah, but each person's experience is unique and makes a different kind of contribution, helps you understand it from many perspectives.
Yes.
That's
yes.
What I think is important.
Well, I can only, like I say, give you what I remember from, from childhood. A young, I wasn't a child either. I was a young adult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I sure do thank you, and I guess we'll end it for today. That's about as much as I'd ask anyone to talk, unless they just want to keep going and going.
Well...